championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser. I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel, the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we are going over the coordinator watch as the Longhorns land Chris Ash, but miss on Graham Harrell. Talk to you about what to expect out of Chris Ash, what to expect after Graham Harrell, and then get into what's happening tomorrow as the Longhorns are going to be adding a few more toys to the toy box with early National Signing Day happening. Tell you about who is enrolling early, who should Longhorn fans be worried about, and what to expect out of each of the recruits that are joining the Longhorns. Darius, you excited about tomorrow, man?
Oh, yeah. You know, Signing Day is one of my favorite things because everybody's you're so optimistic about, you know, every recruit's, you know, rated this. Everybody's going to pan out exactly how you're expecting them to. And we're already ranking classes before the kids have stepped on the field at all. It's a day to dream big. So, no, I'm excited about National Signing Day. And for all those young players and stuff like that, you know, they dream of this day. They dream of it. So I'm excited for them. I just hope kids understand that, you know, it's not the end of your journey. It's just getting started. Right. It's just getting started. But, no, it's awesome.
Hope is a hell of a drug, man. Hope is a hell of a drug.
Right, so I hear.
So
you need to give me some.
Speaking of hope, let's go ahead and talk about what's going on with the defensive coordinator position as the Longhorns have an unofficial official new defensive coordinator in Chris Ash. Well, what is your initial reaction to the Chris Ash hire, Darius?
Well, initially, the first thing you do is look up, you know, what's the last thing he did? He was fired this season from Rutgers. You know, as we know by now, you know, Rutgers isn't a very good program. It's one of the worst programs in FBS football. I think his record over that time was something like 3-27, something like that. He took Rutgers defense from being, you know, one of the worst defenses in college football to at least being middle of the pack the entire time he was there, which is encouraging. With his ties to Coach Herman, with the relationships that they already had, with Coach Herman wanting to keep some type of continuity on the defensive side, I think he was the most realistic option. He was the option that made the most sense. And even though it won't excite some people from a name standpoint, I'm excited about it, just seeing a change from what Texas has been doing the last few years.
Yeah, it's very much an oversteer from what you had with Todd Orlando. Todd Orlando very much focused on a lot more of flash, a lot more gimmicks, a lot more focus on the play and less on the player, so that you don't have such a big drop-off when you lose a few seniors. Now, that really hurt the Longhorns this year, and he couldn't make up for it. So now they're going for a simpler approach. And when you think simple defense, what's the first place you think of? It's Iowa and Wisconsin. Those are the simplest defenses. Those are the most bare knuckles, old style defenses you can get. And that is what Chris Ash's background is. Now, that's where his career really took off, is as a defensive back coach at Iowa, then to Wisconsin under Brett Bielema. Then he turned into defensive coordinator under Wisconsin. And then he went to Ohio State, where he took off to Rutgers. But he is known as a defensive back coach. And his focus is mainly on the fundamentals.
Yeah, from what I read and from what I hear, you know, he's a football lifer. He's a guy that locks himself in the film room, you know, 12 hours out of the day. I'm excited to see if Texas is able to look like they're reacting next season more instead of thinking and hesitating and things like that. I'm excited about the Chris Ash hire. I'm also interested to see, though, because you said he's known as a DB coach, and you know, there's been some talk this season about, you know, Jason Washington, Craig Kniver. It'll be interesting to see where those guys, where they fit in, you know, once they take a look at this thing in a few weeks and start piecing together the rest of the staff.
Right. Going back to Chris Ash and what Longhorn fans can expect out of him, it's going to be very simple fronts. Now, he's a multiple front guy, and everybody's thinking he's just a four-man front guy. He does have a few packages where he brings in a three-man front. However, there will never be less than four guys on the line. You know, when his three-man fronts, it's a 3-0-3 front, which is a three technique, a zero technique, which is right over the center, and another three technique surrounded by two outside linebackers on the outside. So he's not known like for bringing those exotic blitzes that you saw under Todd Orlando. So Longhorn fans, no more blitzing from 12 yards out with a safety.
Hallelujah.
Right, because the most exotic blitzes he really brings are those fire zone blitzes. Very, very basic, quote-unquote exotic blitz. And the most spicy he gets with it is bringing a boundary corner blitz on off of that. Not much there in terms of a lot going on. And in the back in the secondary, press quarters coverage. You get your cornerbacks up in the faces of those wide receivers, and then you're playing quarters coverage, basic man quarters type of coverage. Now, I kind of question that against the Big 12 because press quarters coverage has been something that has really been taken advantage of over the lifetime of the Big 12. It was something that came into focus to combat the air raid, but then Art Briles came along and showed how to beat press quarters coverage.
A good thing for Texas and everybody else in the Big 12 in college football, Art Briles isn't there to terrorize folks anymore. You know, as far as the scheme, my thing is with the coverages and things like that, Texas has all of these big time, really, 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 all their highest rated players on their team are the guys playing in that secondary. So I'm excited to see them, you know, get rid of all the learning the plays, all this stuff. These guys are doing what they do. It now goes back to their roots of, you know, it's mano y mano. You know, and those guys, those safeties back there, you're playing quarters, you're going to make plays on the ball. I'm just excited to see the change from body language. I'm looking a change from a confidence standpoint. You know, we saw those corners go through some growing pains this year. They're going to be juniors next year. You know, it's year three for them. So I'm excited to see the impact that he has on those guys back there with his different philosophy, even though it is simpler, like you said. They're going to be doing the same thing week in and week out. But those guys in that secondary, they're the highest rated guys on this Texas roster. So if they're going to be playing at a high level, I can't help but think the rest of the defense is going to follow.
Right. And one of the more important things that Chris Dash is going to bring to this team is hopefully making sure that they are not last in the nation in terms of missed tackles. And he's doing this by, I'm sure this is probably a point that has just been hammered into Longhorns fans' heads at this point, but rugby style tackling, what does that mean? To break it down really quickly, it's a breakdown and hit towards the inside hip. That's where your attack point is, the inside hip of an offensive player. And the idea is to, once you get contact, is to lasso the thighs together. It's basically what you are taught as a rugby player to do when you tackle, is to take away the, you know, don't go high, and to take away the power of a player. And that comes from the butt and the thighs. So if you take away the thighs, take away and wrap them together, you're not moving your legs and you're not going anywhere. It's less impact and a more sure tackle. No more leaving your feet and launching yourself at an offensive player. Now, you still probably are going to get some diving at feet when you miss on a breakdown, but nothing, you know, BJ Foster is not going to be a happy camper with this type of tackling.
The I am legend, running full speed, you know, screaming, torpedoing yourself at offensive players. Yeah, hopefully that's going to come to an end. You know, that also, not only, like we saw with Texas this year, it puts those guys at risk for knocking yourself out, but also it's a way to get ejected as well. You know, folks have been playing rugby for a long time. Those guys have never worn helmets since they've been playing rugby. My brother played rugby at TCU. You know, those guys get guys to the ground constantly, and they keep their heads out of it. So if you're looking for a good place to learn how to tackle, I couldn't think of a better place to look than rugby. But I'm excited to see, you know, how different this Texas defense looks next year. And I've always thought of tackling also as a, you know, it's a 1-2 kind of deal. It's a mano-a-mano kind of deal. It falls on the players as well. But if you're practicing a more sound way to limit or lower your percentage of missing that tackle, then I'm all for it. Because, again, Texas was Texas was record setting this year with their missed tackles, and that can never happen again if they're looking to. Otherwise, you're going to have a whole new coaching staff again.
Well, you're right. It's the mano-a-mano field. But the idea is to, like you said, reduce the risk of a missed tackle.
Yep. It's not about, you know, you don't have to. It doesn't always have to be a knockout shot. You know, just get guys to the ground. It's the Big 12. You live to see another play. You bend and don't break, you know. That's I Am Legend style might work better in a Big 12, not Big 12, Big 10 or SEC, but in the Big 12, it's gonna get you beat. So I'm glad that that's going by the wayside.
So Darius, what do you think is the biggest potential positive of Chris Ash?
The biggest positive of Chris Ash, well, I can't say no more safety blitzes, right? I think just utilizing that defensive front differently. We saw in that last game, the second half against Texas Tech, Texas changed up. They move those ends outside of the tackles, and Marquez, Bimage, and Taquan Graham look like different guys. You know, I'm excited to see. We talked about the defensive backs, but I'm excited to see what the defensive line looks like next year, being put in positions where they have a little bit more freedom, more room to work instead of, you know, tying up blockers for the linebackers. I'm excited to see the defensive line next year and how disruptive they can be.
And I think for me, the biggest positive for Longhorns is a simplification of the defense in terms of your playing. Now, what's going to get more complicated is the understanding of their responsibilities at a certain position in the field. What is your positional responsibility? What is your responsibility when you are in this part of the field and understanding the responsibilities of every other player on the field? That should be a positive given Texas's understood superior athleticism, quote unquote. If they understand the game, if they understand the fundamentals of this game, then their ability to maximize their athleticism should be unleashed. However, the negative side of that is it's going to take a while for a player to get to that level of fundamental understanding. So what's the downside of that is if you have a young unit, a la the linebackers last year, that could really be a weak link for the entire team. If they don't have the fundamental understanding, then the rest of the team has to pick up for them instead of them being able to be easily covered with play calls.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. You hope to see fewer guys playing out of position, as we've seen the last few years. You know, I can't wait to see Joseph Asai on the end of the line of scrimmage, you know, attacking on the regular. You know, I can't wait to see DeMarvion Overshown, you know, playing a little bit of free safety, a little bit of center field. I'm excited for it. As we've mentioned, as we talked about so far with Ash, he's a proven guy. You know, he's proven he can do this at different places. He's not new to this. He's a guy that Coach Herman can trust and turn the reins over defensively too. I'm hoping it works out for the best. I've got no problem with the hire.
Here's a potential negative with Chris Ash. His unfamiliarity with the Big 12. He is a Big 10 guy. He's very much a Big 10 guy. And we know the Big 10 style of offenses. It is very much a slug it out, 3 yards in a cloud of dust style of offense. The Big 12 is sort of going towards that with guys like Matt Wells, Kansas State's new entire coaching staff, and Neil Brown joining the Big 12. But you still have teams in there like Oklahoma. The Big 12 is still very much a pass-it-around league, although it is really bringing in a lot more running. So it'll be interesting to see how he deals with all of these top-end offenses compared to where he came from.
Yeah, it's the best offensive conference in the country. It has the best offensive coaches. You know, it's a challenge. There are no weeks off in this conference, unlike other places, you know, defensively. So, no, like you said, it's gonna be a grind for him. But, again, by all accounts, he's a guy that lives for this stuff. Supposedly, he had the option of going back to Ohio State to be their defensive coordinator again after they lost their D.C. to Boston College. But he wanted the challenge of coaching in the Big 12, coaching in Texas. So, I'm excited to see him get the opportunity. I'm excited to see what this Texas defense does next year.
I think the most important thing for Chris Ash is going to be finding the guys around him. Do you think that is going to be the most important part of his job coming into Texas, is making sure that he gets coaches around him who can teach those fundamentals of the game that he trusts. That's where you spend the money, is on these assistant coaches, the top end guys.
For sure. You know, and you mentioned he was at Ohio State, you know, he's at Iowa. He knows he's met a lot of people along the way. It's going to be interesting to see what he decides to do with that defensive staff. You know, who's going to be affected by it? Is Oscar Giles going to be looking for a new job? Are the cornerbacks coach? You know, who's going to coach the linebackers? You know, it all falls into place in due time. But you're only as good as the people around you, and that goes for anybody in any profession. Yeah, it's going to be critical. But I am excited to see what Texas does. And, you know, I think everything will heat up really after the bowl season in about 2 weeks.
Right. And as you said, he's a familiar face. He's proven as a Power 5 coordinator. Ohio State wanted him to replace their defensive coordinator. He's a guy who is a good hire. I am whelmed with the hire. I'm not blown away, but it was very much an expected hire. Very much an expected hire.
Yeah, that's the only reason people are, you know, poo-pooing it. It was kind of, you know, he was a guy that was here. He's been here a few weeks, you know, or got here in the middle of the season. If he was a guy that, you know, was just brought in, was never fired from Rutgers, and it just happened, I think folks would be more excited. But he was a guy that you've been hearing about for a while. That's
right,
all.
Right. So let's get to the offensive coordinator, because that is really one of the most important decisions that Tom Herman is going to make going into next year, given you have Sam Ehlinger, potentially Sam Cosmi, and one of the strongest running back rooms that Longhorns have had in quite a while. Graham Harrell rejects Texas's around $2 million offer to stay at USC for $1.2 million. Not a great sentence if you're a Longhorn fan, to be honest. And it sounds like Graham Harrell did not accept this offer to stay at Texas because Tom Herman did not want to relinquish full control of that offense.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that, Darius? What is the immediate thought when you hear that?
I mean, Harrell was the name that Texas fans were instantly given. You know, he was the one that everybody was tracking hard. Everybody was aware that, you know, Texas was interested in him. I didn't see a ton of USC games this year, but just off the top of my head, remembering Coach Harrell at NS and at North Texas, you know, he's a guy that wants to throw the ball. With Texas having, like you said, was potentially going to be one of the better running back rooms they've had in a while next year and things like that. I kind of wonder if, in a way, it's not a little bit of a blessing in disguise, you know, going after another guy, especially with you mentioning and everybody understanding that Coach Herman doesn't really want to relinquish full power of his offense over to someone else. You know, he's fine giving away the defense, but offensively he still wants to say. And with a guy like Graham Harrell, who's, you know, he's on the fast track, he's looking to be a head coach sometime, you know, as soon as possible. You know, he felt like his future wasn't really going to be in his hands with Coach Herman having the final say on it. He's a sexy name. He's a name everybody was excited about. But at the end of the day, I wonder if it doesn't end up working out for the best for both sides.
See, you're taking the more optimistic approach here. For me, I'm not happy with this. And not because I think Graham Harrell is the bee's knees or whatever. It's because of Tom Herman's refusal to give up the offense. At this point in your career at Texas, when you're saying you want to be more of a CEO type of coach, then you need to be able to take risks. Drop your micromanaging of a offense. Look at Bob Stoops, for example, and him going out of his way to get a guy like Mike Leach or like Lincoln Riley, who both were guys who were very much not Bob Stoops' character of dude. Mm-hmm. And both of those guys worked out beautifully for the Sooners. Beautifully.
Well, I mean, at the time when he made those moves, I will say this, Coach Stoops had been, you know, been doing this a lot longer than Coach Herman has.
Right.
I think just like with anything, you know, a profession, anything you're doing, everything, what comes with it, with time comes growth. I think Coach Herman's still growing, you know, as a head coach. I think Bob Stoops, at the point that he was at in his career, was able to look in the mirror and understand not necessarily what I'm best at, but what's most important. Where does my team really need me the most? I don't know if Coach Herman's there yet. I don't know if it'll happen during his time at Texas. But yeah, it definitely, you know, ego, pride plays a little bit of part in everything. But if he's going to fail at Texas, he say he's going to fail with his name attached to it. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with it. But
it was a little, you know, disappointing to see that.
Sure.
To see that
Tom
Herman was just unwilling to relinquish control.
Sure.
He wasn't able to look at himself in the mirror and say, hey, maybe I need to take a step back here and be more of a CEO role, of more of a overwatch and manager rather than the guy who does it.
But I'm cool with it because all that means is anything that doesn't happen with the offense next year, that's on Coach Herman. He's got nobody else to blame. He's got nobody else to point fingers to. So I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Again, Texas, the offense had bright spots last year, but it definitely cost them TCU. It definitely cost them Iowa State. You know, if he's willing to attach his name to it, then, you know, let's roll with it. And if it doesn't work out, then it'll be on him. But I can't say that I'm just terribly devastated with the Nylander Harrell. When he didn't accept the job, when we heard about the offer about a week ago and he didn't take it then, I kind of had the feeling that, you know, it was something else to it. He's going to have his name on it. He says, if I'm going to get fired, I'm going to get fired doing it my way. So best of luck to him. We'll see how it works out. But with a senior Sam, Texas should. If Texas isn't scoring points next year, then that's not.
You're right. I do think it is very much. Yeah. If they're not scoring with Sam next year, then boy, first off, what a waste. God, that would suck. But the second is, it's definitely right now, it seems like it could potentially be the youth of Tom Herman. And one thing that was my main criticism of him when they hired him is a guy who they're going to wait. They're going to have to wait for him to grow as a coach. And Texas was not looking for that when they were hiring a coach, but that's what they got. Because you look at guys like Brian Kelly after, what was it, 2016, when Texas went and beat them, but then Notre Dame went 4-8. Brian Kelly did what Tom Herman did. He got rid of both of his coordinators. He got rid of basically every assistant coach, brought in an entire new staff. The next year they won, I believe, 10 games. And then 2 years later, they go to play in the college football playoffs. But he went out, when he went and fired those two coordinators, he went out and got two guys who were very much not his comfort zone. Mike Norvell, who you guys might know now as the Florida State head coach, was the guy Brian Kelly brought in as the offensive coordinator. And the second guy he brought in was now current Texas A&M defensive coordinator, who they are very happy with, Mike Elko. Both those guys brought Notre Dame back from the brink of chaos. But both of them were very much guys who were out of the comfort zone of Brian Kelly. Tom Herman did not do that. And it could show, you know, we could be here next year at this time and be like, wow, what great hires by Tom Herman. But right now, it looks like a guy who is a guy who's learning on the as a head coach and is learning on the job and making what seems to be comfort hires, which is what Longhorn fans were not wanting, which is why this Graham Harrell business, hey, if he just rejected Texas, it would sting, but not as much as it is learning that this is the reason why.
No, I get that. I get that 100%. It seems like Coach is still, you know, in a way being a little bit stubborn. But again, hey, he's attaching his name to it. He's doing it his way, Will. So we suffer the reward and he'll suffer the consequences either way. But it's definitely on him in 2020.
Right. So the guys who are up next for that offensive coordinator spot, kind of a big question mark at this point. I think we're going to get a lot more clarity after National Signing Day. But right now, man, Super K has heard of Brian Messingham at Kansas State, which, man, Longhorn fans, I'm sure you are really happy about that one. They're probably super, super pumped.
Hey, Kansas State won 8-9 games this year.
Yeah, with pretty crappy talent.
I will say that.
But probably not a big, you know, what Longhorn fans wanted to go after. And then you also have Phil Longo.
Who just got fired.
Yeah, Rhett Lashley.
Who just got fired.
Right. So, man, the prospects right now, not great. But we'll see. The coaching carousel continues to churn. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens there. As we get more info, we'll bring it to y'all. But so far, those are the names. And
basically, guys, y'all's guess is as good as ours right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's
but basically, the OC is going to be Tom Herman again. So he doesn't have nobody else to blame.
Yep, yep. So let's go ahead and get to what's happening tomorrow with Tom Herman getting a bunch of shiny new toys in the form mm-hmm. of freshmen. So, early signing day, 2019. Let's get into it. Let's talk about these early enrollees. Starting off with Logan Parr. Darius, after his senior year, what have you seen out of Logan Parr?
Logan Parr was a guy I saw in the spring a few times. You know, he's always, you know, willing to talk when you reach out to him. I think for sure he's an interior guy at the next level. Logan's going to need to get bigger, get stronger, you know, as all freshmen, you know, are. You know, he's not a guy that I think is going to come in and play within his first 2 years. You know, I think Logan's a guy that you'll see preferably in year three or four. But great kid, really intelligent guy. He's got good feet. He plays through the whistle. But I think he's not an instant impact kind of guy. I think he's a guy that he's definitely going to play on the interior, probably guard, maybe center. He can work a little bit of center in the spring, but he's an interior guy that he's a guy that you want a red shirt and you look for him to contribute a few years from now.
Right, right. He's a guy who very much a goofball from when I've met him. Very, very goofy dude in the best way. He is a guy who, again, you're going to be looking to get the fundamentals down, get the size down, and build on his frame. And I think the guy who's going to be going after that center spot is Jake Majors, the next guy who's going to be an early enrollee this year. Jake Majors out of Prosper, Texas. The guy is another four-star commit, a four-star recruit, 6'3", 280 pounds, very much like Logan Parr. He's a guy who, again, you're going to have to wait for a little bit, give him a few years, and give him some time in the weight room to get his body right, get his mind right, so that he can be the center that you want, that you need in an offense like the power spread.
Well, yeah, Major's got quicker feet than Parr does. He also doesn't have as much functional strength, even though he and Parr both have to get stronger. But I love how nasty Majors is, how he finishes blocks, how he plays through the whistle. He's got great feet. You know, he's another, seems like a really smart kid. But yeah, another guy that you hopefully don't have to see, you know, until year two or three. But Jake Majors is one that I'm probably out of all the offensive linemen. No, I take that back because I really like Carriage, but I like Jake Majors a lot as a prospect.
Right. And you know what's really nice is the Longhorns really addressed this need in the past two classes of the offensive line, giving them some ample time to let these guys grow, which is something that under Charlie Strong they did not do a good job of doing. Mm-mm. And now they finally have that depth in that offensive line room to let this happen. We'll see actually what happens next year since they're losing three seniors. It's still miles ahead of where it was. Now let's get to the guy who is one of the guys who's going to be behind this offensive line with Hudson Card. And Hudson Card just got knocked out of the state playoffs last week by North Shore. But man, does that kid look good as a quarterback. He is athletic. He's able to escape the pocket, throw the ball downfield. He's your classic Lake Travis quarterback. He is a primary passer first, but he's got a little wiggle to him in the ability to get out of that pocket, get his legs downfield, or throw it downfield.
Yeah, Hudson Card, you know, he's your guy. I know you're excited about him. He's going to get a leg up on Jaquindon Jackson for those that aren't aware. Quentin Jackson hurt his suffered a knee injury this past weekend. It looks like he wasn't enrolling early anyway, but it's looking like he's probably going to miss the 2020 season. So Hudson Carr's got an opportunity in front of him this spring and this summer to carve out himself a role. No, he throws a great ball. We know how he's athletic. He can make guys miss. He fits the system that Coach Herman wants to run really well, and really bright kid. He's got some leadership qualities about him. I'm excited about Hudson Card. And Texas fans should be as well.
I have a quarterback type. It's a white scrambling quarterback who is extremely accurate.
White scrambling quarterback.
It is extremely accurate. And that is exactly what Hudson Card is. He just has accuracy in spades. That's what I really do like about Hudson Card, is his accuracy and his ability to scramble downfield.
Yeah, my only issue with Hudson Card is I feel like he puts up great numbers when they're not playing anybody. Anytime they played some teams that had equal talent or more talent.
He put up some good numbers against North Shore. Come on.
What was the final score?
It's okay. North Shore is North Shore.
But look up Lake Travis against anybody the last 2 years when they played somebody that was of equal talent. They lost every time. That's just my only red flag. But no, I'm excited for the kid. I'm excited to see him. Hopefully he proves me wrong. You know I'm a Quentin Jackson fan.
Of course. It's too bad that he's hurt. And the same thing with this next guy, Xavien Alford, the safety at a Shadow Creek in Perlin, Texas. He is 6 foot, 180, a mid 4-star player. He's been hurt the entire year. And there's not really much we can get out of his tape. I mean, his junior tape looked great. He's a ball hawking safety. Very much reminds me of a guy like Chris Brown. But we really can't get much out of his senior tape because there is none.
Yeah, Alford's going to spend the spring getting back in football shape. He got injured in, I believe it was the first or second game of the year this year, and he's been out the entire time. His program, his school is so good that they're still playing in the state championship this weekend without him. I think they played Ben Ryan.
Because isn't it a brand new program?
I think Shadow Creek is about 3 or 4 years old now, but apparently they got all the big dogs that used to work on the Pearland High School and things like that. So they got them all. It worked out for whoever whoever was zoning knew what they were doing. But no, Alford's a guy I liked a lot on his junior film. You know, he doesn't mind coming up to hit you. He covers a lot of ground. He knows where that ball is. But he's going to spend the spring, you know, getting back in shape. I don't know how much of an impact he's really going to be able to make next year. Of course, we know with this secondary being upperclassmen now, I think he's going to be looking, fighting to carve out a role on special teams. But he's a guy that I think has a bright future at Texas. Maybe not as much of a role next year in 2020, but 2021, 2022, I think you'll start seeing that guy out there on the field a lot. I really like Xavien Alford.
And a very vocal Longhorn fan.
Yeah, he's been locked in.
He is the vocal Twitter presence in this class. He is the guy who is very pro-Texas. He's the one who's tweeting everything about Texas. That is your dude in this class.
He's proud to be a Longhorn. You can't never have enough guys like that.
Nope. The next guy you have is Vernon Broughton. And he was a really big name when the Longhorns brought him in. He is a mid-4-star. He's a defensive tackle out of Cy Ridge in Houston, 6'5", around 280, 290, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. But he's looking more on the 290 side these days. His senior film is it's not as good. He's taken a step back from his junior film for sure. Now, he has a lot of functional strength. He has great strength. He has a decent frame, but he's lost a step.
I don't know that if I watched him, I don't know if I thought he lost a step. I thought he spent most of his senior year trying to prove how strong he was. He was spending more time, you know, trying to pancake.
Maybe that's what it is. In his film, he's not really.
I thought he was spending more time trying to show that he could drive linemen back and pancake linemen, and he was letting guys go past him, you know, with the ball. But, you know, I think that comes from, you know, looking at rankings, you know, listening to critics and outside stuff. But he definitely put on some weight from a junior to senior year. I thought he still showed some nice burst and pursuit and things like that when he was focused on getting to the ball. I don't think he doesn't have a real strong punch. You know, he doesn't in that phone booth. I don't think he has that phone booth strength. And when I look at his body, you know, I see a guy that I know that he grew up playing basketball. He's a basketball guy. But he's got a real, even though he's 280, 285 pounds, he's still got a skinny lower body. And he's going to need some time, you know, in the weight room. He really, what would, in my opinion, be best for him would be to redshirt and try to, you know, remake his body a little bit. But that's not going to happen with him being as highly rated as he is. And, you know, with Texas or anybody for that matter, you know, always needing as much defensive line talent as possible. You know, you got to get guys in there. And he definitely has talent. But I would caution Longhorn fans on what their expectations should be for him as a true freshman. I think he'll play, but as far as his impact next year, I think that it's going to take him a little bit of time to adjust.
Sort of,
but definitely
the opposite of Tavondre Sweat. Where
I think it'd be similar. I think it'll be similar to Devon. I think you'll see similar type of snaps as DeVondre Sweat, but DeVondre Sweat's
I'm talking about production.
Yeah, I could see a DeVondre Sweat type of year for Vernon. Yes, for sure, for sure. I think that should be Longhorn fans. The ceiling for his freshman year should be like a DeVondre Sweat, in my opinion.
Right, but don't expect it. That's the ceiling.
Give him some time.
Right.
Okay. The talent is there, but he's got some things to work on.
Right.
He was getting compared at one point to DeMarvin Leal from last year. He's not that level of prospect coming in.
Right. So the next guy we got in is another safety, Jaron Thompson, an East Texas dude coming from Lufkin. He is 6 foot, 180. Sort of a low to mid four-star guy, number 15 in the nation on safety. What are you seeing in Jaron Thompson?
He's not the biggest. You know, he shows he's got some speed, man. He covers ground. He likes to hit. He's physical. He's the first Lufkin player Texas is getting since my old roommate Carrington Bynum was back there playing cornerback. I think he started for 3 years for Texas. So, you know, knowing what kind of guys come out of there, you know, that's Dez Bryant, you know, Lufkin, Texas. That's Kiki Kuti. You know, it's some guys come out of there. And Jaron Thompson was a guy that, you know, he took his time with the recruiting process. And as soon as Texas came calling, I think he committed like a week later. He's another guy that, similar to Alford, I don't know how big of a role that he can realistically expect to play next year. I think he has got a chance to carve out some time on special teams. Thompson and Alford are two guys that Texas fans can be excited about seeing on the field in the next few years. They're both physical. They both do a good job of finding the ball while it's in the air. Them being able to come in early shows you that they take care of business, not just on the field, but off the field as well. So I'm excited about Jaron Thompson.
And the next guy is Troy Amere. He was one of actually the first guys I talked to in this class, and it's interesting to see him pop on into it. He is a 6'3", 6'4", 200-pound wide receiver. And he is that typical big-body X wide receiver that you see at so many places. But he really doesn't have that speed that you look for, like a Colin Johnson, like a CeeDee Lamb. More of a 4'7 type of guy, 4'8". Well, I guess technically a 4'6", 9 40. So, Darius, what are you expecting out of Troy Amere?
I like Troy's potential. I don't know. When I look at his film at Fort Bend Austin, of course, you know, they use him at Wildcat quarterback. They use him primarily outside. I don't know what he looks like playing inside, whether he has the versatility to play inside and outside as well. But like you mentioned, he's huge. He's legit 6'3.5", 6'4". He's got a real big catch radius. There's playing time to be had next season at wide receiver for Texas. Like, you know, losing Devin Duvernay, losing Colin Johnson, with the question marks surrounding, you know, a guy like Marcus Washington. We don't know what's going on with Josh Moore. There's playing time to be had. And with him enrolling early, he's definitely putting himself in a position to carve out a role for himself. And I think physically he actually looks a lot like, he reminds me a little bit of a guy like Brennan Eagles, but you know, we know Eagles is a lot faster. I am really interested to see what he looks like this spring because he's a guy that I view as being raw. But we also, you know, he's a guy that has not wavered, even with Texas not having a receivers coach, anything like that. So he's coming for all the right reasons, and I'm really excited to get eyes on him. He's another guy that I've never seen in person.
And on top of that, he comes from a good family. That's one of the things that football fans really don't look at when it comes to recruiting is the family that they come from. And coming from a good family – coming from
I don't understand what you're getting at. He's a kid that is bound to happen in college, but when he faces some adversity, you know, his first thought process isn't going to be, oh, I need to hit the transfer portal or I'm not getting treated fairly. From what he's got parents that he understands that there's a process to everything and you got to earn stuff. Everything is not going to go your way. You know, everything's a process. You have to put in the work. Okay. And so he's not going to come in with his hand out or can be complaining about promises that weren't fulfilled or things like that. He understands that, you know, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. So I understand what you're getting at 100%. He should be able to deal with adversity better than we see some other guys. For sure.
Right.
For sure.
Right. He has good role models to get to look up to who understand parenting, right? So the last guy that you have coming in as an early enrollee is the last guy who committed to Texas, Sawyer Gorham Welch, the newest guy. You want to talk about what Longhorn fans can expect out of this new guy?
Yeah, I've got the commitment analysis up on the donor website for all you listeners. But Sawyer Gorham Welch, he was a guy that he had been previously committed to Oklahoma State for a few months. CJ talked to him. I think he said it was last summer. And he said he was gushing about Texas. He was dying for that Texas offer. And at the time, it didn't look like it was going to happen. But when I look at Sawyer Welch on film, Gorham Welch on film, it's apparent, you know, he's every bit of that 280, 285 that he's listed as. Most of it sits in his lower body. You know, he's going to get bigger up top, but he's a guy that I think could be a defensive tackle in a 4-3 look. He could also be an end in a 3-4 look. He's got some positional, some scheme versatility to him. He doesn't provide much as far as, you know, explosion off the snap. He got better as a pass rusher from his junior year to his senior year. But I think he's very much a guy that you get him in a program. He was a captain at Longview, which is one of the premier programs in Texas. The East Texas guy. He's not going to have much of an ego. And he's just going to come to work every day with his lunch pail. And eventually, you know, he might end up being another team leader for you down the road. But I think the guy I compare him to on the current Texas roster is a guy like Daniel Carson, who Texas fans, we haven't seen much of yet, but he's got that body, he's got that frame, he's got that size. I think he's just going to need a little bit of time to adjust, and I think he could be a guy that contributes later on in his career.
Yeah, you're right. Sawyer being kind of that lunch pill guy, one who's not highly rated, I like those in a class. I really do. Those guys who don't have an ego. Those are a lot of the times the guys who actually pan out because they're the ones who are willing to take their time and willing to take the criticism and learn and grow instead of expecting things to come to them immediately. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, a five-star guy can't come in and do that, but when you know, it's the guys like at Baylor who are willing to take their time over 3 years and learn and grow, and then they turn into an 11-1 team or 11-2 team.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have some kind of balance. You know, of course, you got guys that are going to come in and had all the accolades, the big head, and, you know, you got to have guys that are workers too. And you hope that, you know, the team takes on a personality, you know, of those guys that understand patience and things like that. But Gorham Welch, again, he's a guy that was dying to be a part of the program. He basically committed on the spot when he got the offer a few weeks ago. He's a guy that's going to bleed burnt orange. He's going to give everything he's got to the program. And, yeah, you just never know with guys like that. You might look up 2 years from now. He might be the next James Lynch. He might have 12 sacks, lead the Big 12. You just never know. But he's a body, and Texas needed him. They needed more bodies after losing Van Fillinger. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Princely. He's going to sign during the second period. Texas needed bodies on that defensive line, and they got them one in Gorham Welch. I think he could end up being a quality body and not just a body.
So let's go ahead and talk about those guys who are not signing in this period or could potentially not be signing with Texas. Some guys who you potentially have to worry about. Make sure that they either aren't signing at all or they are signing with Texas. And we'll start off with the guy who Longhorn fans should be keeping an eye on tomorrow, Quentin Johnston, the big wide receiver from Temple. He is extremely athletic. He is a guy who you do not want to lose. He is a playmaker. He is a baller. However, there have been a lot of very, you know, trustworthy words coming out from around Quentin Johnston that he could be flipping on National Signing Day to TCU. Darius, what are your immediate thoughts on the potential of that happening?
I'm actually looking right now. There was just a crystal ball put in 30 minutes ago from a guy that covers Texas recruiting that has him flipping to TCU. TCU's been in his ear really heavy for the past month or so. When Texas got rid of the receivers coaches and removed Tim Beck of his duties, Gary Patterson and TCU's wide receivers coach Malcolm Kelly have been working him hard. They've been working him hard. I can confirm as well, Quentin did sneak off to Fort Worth. He did take a visit to TCU recently. There's a lot of smoke around that one. The biggest concern with it being with him is he doesn't know who his coach is going to be. He's got a good relationship with Malcolm Kelly. TCU is selling being able to develop him better than Texas has. They're selling, you know, putting guys in the league like what's my man name from a few years ago? Josh Dotson. Yeah, Jalen Reagor. They're selling development. They're selling continuity. They're selling early playing time to Quentin, and they're telling him that Texas doesn't have any stability. And even though he committed to Texas, he did commit, you know, to Drew Maringer being the receivers coach. And even though Temple is not very far from Austin at all, Texas fans, this is one you're going to have to sweat. You're going to have to keep an eye out on signing day. You would hate to lose a guy like that. He's one of the top, in my opinion, he's easily one of the top five recruits in the class, in the Texas class. I think he's got a tremendous upside. Yeah, he's going to be one that you have to watch.
It would be hell to have to play against him instead of playing with him. That is one you need to watch for sure.
I think he's got superstar potential.
Right.
But yeah, he definitely visited TCU a few weeks ago. I don't know. I don't remember seeing that reported anywhere. But he visited. They've been in this here heavy. They were there this past Friday. With the dead period being here now, I just he's not a guy that talked anyway. You know, he doesn't do much social media. You know, he's not a guy that likes a lot of spotlight. Right now, I'm expecting him to flip TCU. I would be pleasantly surprised if he sticks with the Longhorns. So that's gonna be my Christmas present on Wednesday. If he sticks with Texas, it'll be keeping Quentin Johnston in the fold.
Right.
And but yeah, he's one that Texas you should be sweating about right now.
Two other guys that you need to watch on Wednesday, make sure that they don't sign anywhere: Princely Mamielin and Alfred Collins. Those are two guys who you want to make sure that you get a second crack at come second National Signing Day.
Yeah, Alfred's been maintaining for the last, I think, 2 weeks now. He's been saying he was going to sign in February after initially planning to commit in December. He's looking at three schools. We know who they are: they're Oklahoma, they're Baylor, they're Texas. I think he's giving Texas one last chance. You know, he's going to let them make their hire. I think he's a guy that, you know, was all but locked in to go to Texas, even though I personally felt that he was always, you know, keeping his options open. I think everybody around him wants to go to Texas. I think Texas makes the most sense for him. But he's a guy that wants to, you know, the NFL is his main goal. He wants to win. He's going to give Texas another chance to make their defensive line higher to see if it's a guy that he meshes with. So he's going to take his time and wait. Super K on our website has been saying that he expects Princely to eventually end up back in the Texas class. Princely decommitted because he was having concerns about playing in Todd Orlando's defense and being asked to take on guards and tackles. So with the hiring of Chris Ash, with a potentially new scheme coming forward. I think
more focus on the defensive line.
Yeah. So Princely is a guy that right now, Super K, they're expecting to be back in the class. So that'd be great. Alfred Collins though. Obviously be on the lookout for those guys committing on tomorrow. It's best for Texas, obviously, if they drag it out to February and they get more time to talk to them. And if Texas gets those two guys in the class, man, that changes the entire outlook on the class, in my opinion, defensively.
Right. Right. So let's go to the rest of these commits that are probably going to be signing with the Longhorns. Give Longhorn fans a refresher on each one of these guys. Bijan Robinson. Who's Bijan Robinson?
Five-star running back. He'd be the highest-rated running back to sign with Texas since Jonathan Gray. And hopefully he works out better than Mr. Gray did. But I think Bijan Robinson, looking at him on tape, he's a guy that could easily come in next year and give you, you know, anywhere from 400 to 600 yards. He's got a home run hitting ability that we haven't seen in the Texas backfield in a few years. He's big time. He's a top-rated recruit in the class. Obviously, he's a guy to be excited about. Chose Texas over Ohio State and USC.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's a guy who, if you can get him in the class, I'm interested to see what he does when he gets smacked in the mouth, because he's very much made his money in high school football avoiding guys. And he can do that, especially given the league that he's in. But he reminds me of a Tavon Austin in terms of his tape, in terms of his ability to move around guys and explode. But he's a running back. So that's the one thing that I'm worried about, given Bijan Robinson. But it's a very, very minuscule nitpick in his game, which is just, you know, 20-yard per carry average.
Well, no, he definitely, you know, when you watch his highlights, he definitely has got some nice lanes to run through. He's a guy that holds that ball loosely. You know, yeah, when he takes that first hit, when B.J. Foster hits him, when DeForest Overshown hits him in practice, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he responds to it. But he's a guy that's a legitimate 205, 210 pounds. He's cut up. He's built. And I was looking at him at the Rivals 5-star challenge this past summer. I didn't realize how good of a route runner that guy was or how good his hands are. He's a complete back from a running and receiving standpoint. Now, obviously, we got no clue how he pass blocks, how he'll pick up the nuance of the position at the next level as far as, you know, the little stuff. And that will impact his playing time. You know, can they trust him? But from a talent standpoint, he's the best back Texas has signed in nearly a decade. He's right. A real deal.
Right. So the next guy, Jaquinnon Jackson, your dude.
Oh, yeah.
If y'all go back to our podcast last week, you'll get a refresher on Jaquinnon Jackson. Mm-hmm. In terms of talent level, he's very comparable to Hudson Card. Hudson Card very comparable to Jaquinnon Jackson. I think the two are going to be battling out for the quarterback position when Sam Ehlinger leaves. He's 6'2", 220. You think he's Vince Young incarnate?
I think he's a little bit bigger than 220. He's a legit 6'3", 230 pounds. He's got a cannon for an arm. We talked about he just injured his knee this past weekend. If from the reports are, I mean, from what I'm hearing, from what I understand, it's an ACL. He tore his ACL, which means he's going to be out for the 2020 season. He's a guy that I thought, without a doubt, 100% was going to have a package. He's going to have some type of role in the offense this upcoming season. What this injury does, it creates an opportunity for Hudson Card to create some separation heading into 2021 when it's time for that face-off, for that battle. But a great thing about both of those guys, both Jaquinden and Hudson, if one of them doesn't win the position, if they want to stick around, they both do have the athletic ability to make an impact somewhere else. You know, both guys have played receiver in high school. Jaquinden's got the body type, the size, the physicality to potentially make an impact on the other side of the ball as well. We talked about him. I think he's the best player in the class. I think you never know how guys are going to come back from an injury, but if he recovers to being 100%, I think he can be a guy that gets Texas back to where they're supposed to be.
Right. Next guy we got is Prince Dorba. Prince coming from Highland Park. It'll be interesting to see how he fits into this new defense, given he very much fit that B linebacker role.
Yeah, Prince Dorba's a guy that has played pretty much exclusively defensive end with his hand in the ground at Highland Park. He's not going to be able to do that in college at Texas. Right now, Prince Dorba's about 210. Maybe he might be even lighter than that right now because he's playing basketball for Highland Park. For y'all that don't know, he's a basketball guy. He's played his whole life. I think right now he might be about 200 pounds. So he's not going to be able to play with his hand in the ground at the next level. Not next year. Probably not at all during his career. I haven't seen him in coverage, how he drops back or anything like that. But where his value is, what his value is as a football player, as a recruit, is his ability to get after the quarterback. And you can never have enough of those guys. You know, even if his job, his only role as a freshman or in his second year is just to come in on passing downs and, you know, put that leg back and pin his ears back and get after the quarterback. He's a guy that gets after the quarterback like no other player in the state in this class. So that was a huge win for Texas securing his commitment. As far as where he ultimately lands, where he ultimately fits in, I think that's something you can worry about later. It depends on where his body takes him, but his immediate value comes in with his ability to get after the quarterback.
Right, right. Next guy we have is Keaton Crawford, one of my favorite cornerbacks in this class. It was not a very great year for cornerbacks in the state of Texas, but Keaton Crawford was an excellent early evaluation by the Longhorns and a great nab out of East Texas. Going back to the powerhouse of John Tyler.
Oh, hey, breaking news, Will.
What?
Quinn Johnson did just flip. Yep, he just flipped to TCU. All right. So there you go. That hurts. That hurts. So there you go. So we were just talking about it, and there it is. Quinn Johnson has flipped his commitment to TCU. And so Texas loses their top receiver commitment in the class. He was a guy that, he posted it on his Snapchat. So he's going to sign with TCU on Wednesday. He said he appreciates everybody that's been there through all of this. It's the hard decision of his life, but he's going on what he feels is best for him. He's signing with TCU on Wednesday, so that news sucks. So, you know, Texas will still try to flip him back. Even though it's a dead period, I don't know how, but, you know, there are ways of back-channel communication. Yeah, man, he flipped, so he's going to TCU. As of right now, he's going to TCU. So, bam, right, just like that, Texas loses their top receiver commit, and I think he's got a chance to be pretty special. So, yeah, that sucks.
Oh, boy, that's big. All right. So, yeah, that's a punch to the gut. That's a real-time reaction to that news right here. So, let's go ahead and...
At no point should Texas ever lose a recruit to TCU.
Yeah. It should definitely be the other way around. We'll see if it sticks.
But for that matter, yeah, they should never lose a guy to Utah. They should never lose guys. Yeah, but this is just one simply from not having a receiver coach, not being able to. Quentin Johnson was a guy that was locked in.
This is going to be one of those guys like J.K. Dobbins where you're just watching. You're like, damn. Or Rondale Moore where you're like, damn.
You don't see guys that are 6'4", can high jump 6'10", and then run 4.54. They don't grow on trees like that, man. And Texas don't have – I don't know. That sucks. That sucks really bad.
All right, next guy, Andres Carrick. let's chuck along here. What are Longhorns getting in Carrick?
Carrick is a guy. He's a guy that, you know, you've watched his junior film. He's a guy like, oh man, like maybe this guy, he's a little bit underrated. But then I saw him. He put on some weight during the senior season. He works out with former Longhorn Donald Hawkins out there in South Lake. I got to see him in person this year. Soto, we played South Lake. Carriage is a guy. You talk about nasty. I talk about how Jake Majors finishes plays. Well, Carriage is going to play tackle. He's bigger than both Majors and Parr. He's got lighter feet, and he's even meaner than both of those guys. Andres Carriage is a guy that I think has got a chance to contribute in his second season or so. I think you start looking for that guy to play as a redshirt freshman, as a redshirt sophomore.
Yeah.
I think he has the ability to play either the left side or the right side. I'm excited about Carriage.
I agree. I really am excited about Carriage. I think he's a guy who is one of those really good evaluations, like mm-hmm. Sam Cosmi, like Derek Kerstetter, a guy who you're not expecting, but he turns out to be the dude. So looking forward to Carriage. Next guy, Jaden Holaby, going to be a linebacker. But I don't know, how excited are you about Holaby?
Jaden's a guy I've never been able to get on the phone. I know he was at Bishop Dunn last year. He spent this senior season back where he started at Mansfield Timberview, and they used him primarily as a quarterback, as a running back. I don't know a ton about Holaby. I know he's got good size, 6'2", about 210. Texas needs linebackers, so you know if there's playing time to be had there. If he's able to adjust quickly. But Holaby is a guy that, you know, he stays out of the spotlight, doesn't have a lot to say. You know, you don't see him. It's hard to find film of him at any camps or anything like that. But clearly Texas saw something they liked early on in the process. And, hey, maybe he's a guy that comes in and surprises us. But, yeah, he's one of the guys I'm interested to see. I wish he was an early enrollee. It's going to be all right, man. They'll find another receiver. It'll be all right.
All right. Dejon Harris, and speaking of wide receivers, well, I guess he's going to be more of a defensive back guy out of Hutto, Texas, a guy who's close to home. But another guy who is right now dealing with injury. What do you think about Dejon?
I think he's a jitterbug type of player on offense. I think we're planning on starting him off playing in a slot or things like that. But he's a guy that, you know, Texas doesn't have a lot of guys that they can just, you know, throw a bubble pass to that can make two or three guys miss and take it 40, 50 yards. That's the type of deal that's been missing from this offense. And I think Dejon Harrison provides some big playability, some excitement from a small package. He's also got some return ability as well. He's another guy that's suffered an injury during his senior year, so it'll be important to see how he bounces back from that. How long it takes him to get back to feeling comfortable out there. But he's got some big playability, for sure.
For sure. All right. We're a little down. Let's get out of here. Thank y'all for hanging out with us. It's been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Mr. DT, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter as well, DTERRELL05. And yeah, man, it's gonna be, you know, hey, Quentin Johnson was the only one to watch. So hey, Texas fans, everybody else is supposed to be signing on Wednesday. You know, hey, if Bijan Robinson decides not to sign until February, then I'll start having an attitude about stuff. But it's gonna be all right.
Just get,
you know,
Bijan in the class. Jeez, please get Bijan in the class.
But that's what happens, man, when you have changes and, you know, you've got. Hey, Texas is going to get it from all angles, man. They don't get it from everybody, negative recruiting. But Quentin Johnson hurts. It hurts.
Yeah.
But it's going to be all right.
All right. So let's go ahead and get on out of here. This has been – so y'all have been listening to the Horns Catch. You can find other episodes and shows on any podcasting platform under Horns Catch. That's iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. On that note, thank y'all for listening, and hope you have a better day. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.